Last night was our third and final performance of our theater production, Martin Luther King Jr. And this particular lighting configuration we used to show those times when Martin Luther King was going through tremendous self-doubt and when he didn't know he could go on. And I feel a little bit like that today, but here it goes. On very little sleep. I knew I was getting tired yesterday because I was sitting with Robert outside here during the day before the big Saturday night performance, and I had the thought, wouldn't it be great if we started takedown early today so that we wouldn't have as much to do after the performance? And then I thought, well, if we start taking down the lights and the set before the play, that's the mind starts turning to mush. So using the play process as a metaphor for today's talk, I thought, every year we start with an idea. Someone on the staff, Barbara, Helen, comes up with an idea for next year's play. Who could we do? Kuan Yin, Hafiz, Yogananda, Jesus, Moses, Krishna, St. Francis, Joan of Arc. These are all people we've done in the past. And we all start as an idea. Master said at the point of conception, there is a flash of light in the astral world. And based on our karma, our desires, our unlearned lessons, we're either drawn to that light or not drawn to it. And when two souls are drawn to it, that's how we end up with twins sometimes. So we come down onto earth and we incarnate. We start with our play. We have the idea. We're going to do a play about so-and-so. So then we have to get a script. We have to get the words on page. We have to tell the story. Well, we get to write our own scripts, basically. We add our own dialogue. Then we look for a director. We have to have someone who has the idea and the feel for the play and how they're going to represent it. Those of us who have a little bit of wisdom find a guru or a spiritual teacher at some point in their life, someone who can help us to develop our roles correctly. Oh gosh, we start doing our rehearsals with 50 children. It is a scene. One of the children this year, he's a pre-K, and this was a rather chaotic rehearsal. Those big crowd scenes are not easy to pull together. And he turned to Megan and he said, "Megan, is this the performance?" And Megan goes, no, this is just a rehearsal. And he said, "What's a rehearsal?" One story I love to tell is one time a child was up here. This is a previous play and Matthew was working with him. He didn't have his lines down. It was late in rehearsals, but he didn't have them down. So he said, "Okay, go get your script." So he came up and he had a script and he still couldn't read his lines. And I felt so bad for him. And Matthew was kind of exasperated because there is a degree of pressure. I mean, there's a performance Saturday night. We gotta be ready. So I went over to him at break and I just patted him on the back and I looked down at his script and he had highlighted all his lines like you're supposed to. But the trouble was he used a really dark brown marker. So you couldn't even read the words. Then we have Marguerite come in and she adds the dance. And in our lives, I guess some of us like to celebrate a little bit, St. Patrick's Day. And that adds some lightness to our plays. And then there's the tech. There's the lighting, which I had a little hand in. There's the music cues. It gets really involved, the video. We shoot three cameras last year, three different performances. And then you try to edit all this footage into one coherent film. I asked the children, one child one year after the first two performances, he cut his hair and he dyed it a different color. So when you're watching the movie, his character goes through these metamorphoses. So we thought we learned the lesson, but two boys came last night with all their really long hair cut off and the dad was apologetic, but we'll just move on. So then we have the rehearsals, they come together, and then we have the big performances. And so we come together like last night, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturday. Each one had different feels to it, different, high points, low points. A child last night said, "Line." And Robert didn't give him a line, he gave him a fragment. He said, "Fire," or whatever the line was. And the actor, and the word was off, and the actor just turned to him and goes, "What?" And the plays would go from just totally powerfully moving, the assassination scene and some of these things, to to just, these are just young children and they're having fun, but they're all playing their part beautifully. So then it gets really interesting. The play ends and an hour and a half, an hour and 20 minutes actually last night, there's the set's gone, the chairs are back, the blue paper's down. Did we ever have a play? It's just, it's so surreal. You leave here at night, all you can see are those two green lights on as you make your last exit out. Robert had the honor last night of being that person, but some years it's been me. And everything is gone, and then it's just like, now what was that about? Colette, one of our teachers, is writing her thesis about what is the long-term experience that these children have. And there's a lot. There's self-esteem, there's teamwork, there's cooperation, there is prop building, there is learning lines. You certainly have the social studies. I mean, these kids once went to a museum, and they had been through the Krishna and the Buddha play and these others. It was the Asian Art Museum in San Francisco. And she was just showing us these different pieces from different dynasties and different eras. And she just said, I've seen a lot of school groups, and this is the best school group I have ever seen, based on their knowledge and their questions. I attribute that totally to the plays, that they really learn about the civil rights movement through this play. They really learn about who Buddha was. They really learn about Krishna's life, or whoever we choose to do. But that last set, extending the metaphor, the play is gone, and then the question is, what was that about? And for us, it's when our funeral is. It's like now, you know, we come in, we have our family, we have all this lighting and tech and sound cues and dances, and we raise families and people leave us and this happens and that happens. But even when I was a young kid, I used to just wonder, like, what is this all about? Many people just, they don't ask. They just go through it and they go job to job and experience to experience. But I've always been one of those who just wondered, you know, what is the point of all this? Then I was prepping for this talk at the Master's Mahasamadhi that Robert choreographed, and it was one of the most beautiful evenings in recent memory for me. And what he did, my understanding, is he went to different people and said, bring a reading, bring something to the Master's Mahasamadhi. And so I was sitting back there, like I said, prepping, and Rick stood up and he read two poems, God, 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 and Samadhi. Now, I've heard those poems before, but what I was picking up on is that as an actor, as a disciple, Rick brought his energy and all those years of sadhana to those poems. Tony Cassino stands up, playing a completely different part in life, raising a family. He chooses a segment from Autobiography of a Yogi, and he reads that beautifully. Joe gets up and sings. You don't develop a voice like that in one lifetime. You bring this whole being to those evenings. Patrick and Claire sing a song. Robert stands up and gives a talk. And the integrity and the nobility of each one of those disciples, Brenda Lacoste reads from Man's Eternal Quest. Everyone very different in their backgrounds, everyone very different in who they are, how they started, but they're all manifesting something very real and very beautiful. Then we had the big crowd scene, and these are difficult to choreograph. We asked everyone to come up with their flower, and everyone came up onto the altar, and the lights got very dim, and there was chanting. And the beauty of that devotion, you know, Westerners aren't known for their devotion. We're known for being busy, and we like to make money, and we like to do a lot of things. But it was so, you know, dynamically peaceful up on this altar, on this stage that night. And I just was so touched, and I thought, that's what's real. That's the point of life. That all the masters say that we're here for one purpose, and that's to know God. Now, we all have this other thing. We have the lighting and the tech and the dancing. We have to make a living, and it gets really confusing because we have so many cues and so much input. And especially nowadays, it's just, I don't know, I just feel like the pace of life is insane, especially here in Silicon Valley. I drove back from Minnesota once, and If the movie had a soundtrack, as I came over the Sierras and entered into California, it just started picking up. And I drove through the Valley, Sacramento, and you know, the drum beat just got faster and louder. And it was late at night, but when we got to Silicon Valley, it was just like boom, boom, boom. It just, it's moving, it's energy, it's wonderful. It's Dripara Yuga. Now this third part of my talk, which I'll close with, is kind of a non sequitur, but maybe not. And I'm just always really hesitant to give advice to anybody about anything. My good friend Vidura says he won't counsel anybody. He just doesn't do counseling. But he will sit down with anybody and talk about anything. So I'm just going to offer this to you, and for what it's worth. Next month, Swami Kriyananda is going to be visiting Palo Alto. And I don't know how people relate to him, or if they relate to him, or whatever their perceptions of this man. You're going to end up, very possibly, he'll be standing up here giving a Sunday service. And maybe sometimes he greets people afterwards. And sometimes there's this feeling of, I don't know what to say, I don't know what to do, I don't know how to relate to him. So over the years I've tried this, and because I don't know how to relate to him. I mean, not on a personality level, not on a, hey, we like the same music. Frankly, we don't. He loves beautiful music, and I'm drawn to a more Rajasic brand of music. But when I'm in his presence, I figured out once, it's not like I want to be taking from him. You know, I don't want to be like even subconsciously drawing, you know, give me, give me, give me. So I try and bless him. I try and suspend all my questions, and if I have any doubts, or if I have any judgments, or if I have any sort of mental chatter going on in my mind, I just try and stop it. And by just blessing him and asking Master to bless him, it might be an experiment you'd like to try, because we're going to be blessed with his presence coming up. He'll be around for about 3 months. It's not a happy thought, but many people are thinking this may be his last visit to America. And the connections that some of us have with Swami go far beyond personality or proximity, physical proximity. His consciousness is as much Master's now as his own. So that's where I think part of the hang-up is. It's not a personality. It's not this little man. You look into his eyes sometimes, and it's just like the disciple always becomes the guru in a sense. The ego just dissolves, and what's left is that pure essence. And that's all of our destiny as soon as we're able to muster up the energy to do it. Thank you.
Just tagging on to what Gary said a little bit. First of all, lest I forget, I want to make it a point to invite all of you to an event happening at David and Asha's house this Saturday, where Asha will share her experiences the last 3.5 weeks in India with Swamiji, working on her book about Swami, and also just talking about the event over there, the Mahasamadhi event, and just all the incredible developments going on in India right now. Everybody's invited. It's at 7:00 at David and Asha's, and it will be fun. So we can give you details later if you're not sure how to get there, but please do note that. And regarding the play last night, some of the things Gary was saying, I'd like you to imagine if some kind of virus somehow got in something that the kids were drinking in the play. You know, maybe some green beer from St. Patrick's Day somehow spilled over into the water. And the effect of this virus is that all the kids thought that they were the roles that they were playing. That Francesco goes home and thinks he's Walter Cronkite. You know, or Jasper goes home and thinks he's Jesus. That wouldn't be so bad, actually, but just, you know, imagine how odd that would be. And maybe you're getting my metaphor, I don't know, but we're in a situation here where just by the nature of God creating this world, in order to keep it going, he had to implant a little bug inside of us that makes us really identify with it. Otherwise, if, you know, we were smart, we'd just simply merge back into infinite bliss. And that would be great. But to keep the show going, we have to kind of really think that we're these roles and really take them seriously. And it makes for a good show. Only trouble is it makes for a little suffering if you over-identify with that role and forget where you came from. Francesco, wake up! So that's what is talked about in our talk today, where you know, Jesus is talking to the disciples and saying, basically, wake up. Heaven is where you all came from. Now, I want to talk a little bit about what is heaven, because depending on your background and your, you know, religious input and all this sort of stuff, you may have different images of it. But I'd like to put out that what the masters are saying, basically, is that where we came from is infinite bliss. Heaven is a state of consciousness. It's not some place where we go with our physical bodies, because it's beyond physicalness. It's like when Gary was talking about that image of creating a play. You know, first you have the thought, I'd like to create a play. And then you put out the energy to write the script to make it happen, and then you get all the cast together and the theater lights and all that sort of stuff. And then it actually occurs. And that's how God manifested this play, is by having the thought first. I'm having great just sort of being by myself in infinite bliss, but I think I'll just have some fun and create a show. So I'll just manifest out. I'll manifest a thought, and then that thought will manifest out further and create the energy to sort of make what happens need to happen to create this material world. And furthermore, I'll plant that little bug in the material world to keep it going. This will be a good show. Let's see what happens. So here we all are. Now, if we want to get out of being stuck in that role of thinking that we really are Walter Cronkite, and we're a little tired of that, and we think that there's some more happiness waiting out there, what Jesus is saying essentially is, just remember, there's a great word for this, Smriti. I think that would be a great name for somebody one of these days, to be christened Smriti. It means divine remembrance. And that's just the state of remembering who and what we really are. And I'd like to propose that as we go through, well, this day, this week, just remember that the thing that's going to bring us true ultimate happiness is just filling our lives more and more with that stuff that's eternal, that stuff that we came from and that we're going to bring back. Which is, as Jesus was saying, no one can ascend to heaven except he who came from heaven. We can't really take with us anything that isn't of that state of infinite bliss. We can't take our physical bodies with us, for example. So it would be good for us to not overly identify with these physical bodies. You may have noticed that they change a lot. They're just unpredictable. And they're not going to last. You know, they're going to stop some point. So if we identify with this and all of a sudden it stops being, then we have to have our consciousness go dead. And that's what happens to so many people. But masters, they know that they have an awareness beyond this physical body. They practice it in meditation, where they go still, they go beyond that identification. They remember, oh yeah, that's what I am. And so they know that. And they can have that consciousness and yet live it, just like Jesus did. So the more that we can have that consciousness inside, oh yeah, that's right, I'm eternal bliss. And I'm playing this role right now, but I'm not identified with it. So if my car crashes, you know, I don't identify with my car and think that I've gotten damaged. In the same way, when I die or when I get damaged, I won't overly identify with this body and think that I'm gone. Just a change. Just taking off a costume and putting on another. Those qualities that are infinite are radiant, divine, eternal love. God's nature is love. So when we have other kinds of qualities, like anger or jealousy or, you know, insecurity or thinking that I'm different than you, you know, anything that sort of makes that show go on to create different roles instead of the unity that it all came from, none of that we're able to take with us. So just let it go. Anytime we're having a thought that's sort of bringing our energy down, that's not of God. That's just keeping the show spinning around. Let it go. And just remember, oh yeah, infinite love, infinite bliss. How would I express that more? So, the other thing that I want to say beyond that is that the other quality that's important is humility. An image that Yogananda used that's very useful is the way that God keeps the show going is like projecting waves out of the ocean. So we have all these waves. And the more that they think that they're separate, the bigger that they get. But those who remember where they came from, they're closer and closer to that surface of the ocean. And that's what humility is. It's just remembering where I came from. So you think of great masters like Yogananda, they're very, very close to that surface of the ocean. And they express just for fun, because that's the role that God's asking them to play. But they know where they came from. So it's important to not only remember where we came from, but also hang out with people that have that consciousness. Whether you actually hang out, you know, physically with people that you admire and respect that seem to have that awareness, or whether you hang out mentally with people like Yogananda, or as Gary was saying, just being around Kriyananda. It's a great opportunity to just tune into the consciousness they have and remember, oh yeah, that's me too. They're just like me. And all they did was practice it more and more and more. I want to give a plug for a website that Ramakta put together. And it's just one big page called Ananda Link, anandalink.com. But the reason I like it so much is it is one master webpage that just has every other Ananda website on it. And it's a great way of just looking and seeing all the different things going on there. And just instantly going to Ananda India and seeing everything that's happening in Ananda India. Extraordinary. Or just going to the ananda.org website, click Ananda, and you see everything that's offered there. We're seeing all the books that are offered for free. My point is that that's one way to tune into where we came from and to lift ourselves up and hang out with people that are truly inspiring. And a very simple way if you forget everything else. Oh yeah, okay. How do I remember? Let's see, anandalink.com, okay. That'll pull you out. So that and Saturday, 7 o'clock, David Anasha's and Swami coming. We'll tell you more about that as it all unfolds. And don't think that you're Walter Cronkite when you walk out of here.